Drag back home and drown my troubles away. It's a damn shame what the world's gotten to for people like me, people like you. Wish I could just wake up and it not be true, but it is. Oh, it is. Living in the new world with an old soul. These rich men north or rich men, Lord knows it all. Just wanna have total control. Wanna know what you think. Wanna know what you do. And they don't think you know. But I know that you do. Cause your dollar ain't shit. And it's taxed to no end. Cause they're rich. Politicians look out for miners, and not just miners on an island somewhere. Lord, we got folks in the street, ain't got nothing to eat, and the whole beast milking welfare. Well, God, if you're 5'3" and you're 300 pounds, taxes ought not to pay for your bags of fudge rounds. Young men are putting themselves 6 feet in the ground, cause all this damn country does is keep on kicking them down. Lord, it's a damn shame what the world's gotten to for people like me, people like you. Wish I could just wake up and it not be true, but it is. Oh, it is. Living in the new world with an old soul. These rich men know. Wanna know what you do, and they don't think you know, but I know that you do, cause your dollar ain't shit, and it's taxed to no end, cause the rich men know the rich men. Selling my soul, working all day, overtime hours for bullshit pay.
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of The Story Behind the Story. I'm your host, Dr. H. Ruat. Yeah, the doctor is in, and we need, we need to do a little bit of housekeeping before we bring on a very special guest tonight. But hey, we're trying a new format here, ladies and gentlemen. Hopefully it's coming through loud and clear. I'm not able to do any live feeds, unfortunately, right now, where you got to set it up on a computer, but my computer's not able. So we're just going to do with the video, and hopefully the audio will come through just fine. Ladies and gentlemen, as always, we simulcast here on Revolution Radio. We are picked up and simulcast worldwide on the incredible Gold Water Network, and the founder of that is here with us as is always, from the Philippine Islands. We have Major Burdock. Kevin, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Drew. Good to be with you again.
How's the audio on your end? Can you hear me okay?
Audio's great. I might get over to my office in the second hour and pop up some video. I'm just not, I'm in a different spot right now. So maybe I'll broadcast some video in the second hour.
That would be good. I think it's, I've got all the equipment. I've got a nice microphone. I've got a pretty doggone good big Apple computer. We can do some fun things with this new format. Thank you, Mr. Rowe, for bringing that in. And thank you again, Dom, for all that you do for to make the show a success. Ladies and gentlemen, we always need to mention at the outset that Revolution Radio is not funded by any advertising dollars. It survives because of listeners like you that click the button and give a few dollars here and there. A million people giving a dollar makes a huge difference. Just a single dollar will help keep this station on the air. So thank you for your support. Golly, you know, Kevin, we've got an amazing guest tonight who we can talk for weeks, actually, with this man's knowledge. It's an incredible man. He's broadcasting with us live at a place that most people have not heard of, yet it exists. And we're going to tell a story behind the story tonight of a place called Little Egypt in the southern part of the state of Illinois. There's going to be some things you're going to just listen tonight and just say, really? Or is this absolutely for real? Yes, it is, folks. Sometimes the truth is stranger than fiction. My guest tonight has been living this for, well, on 3 or more decades. He's forgotten more about hidden history than I think people will ever learn in their lifetimes. His name is Harry. We'll bring him on. He can tell you more about. I'd leave it to the guest to tell him a little tell about themselves. His last name, if he wants to give that out, that's totally up to him. He has a great presence on the web. But just the funny thing is, his videos are pretty doggone good, but there's not very many people clicking on them for whatever reason. Harry, welcome to the story behind the story. How are you doing tonight? Can you hear us okay?
Yeah, the audio cleared up. Yeah, I was shadow banned before anybody even used the term. And that's why, you know, a lot of my videos, it was like in 2015 or 2014, somebody had told me that they watched some of our videos and there's nothing that comes up after. If you watch a Harry Hubbard or a Paul Spock or one of our videos, nothing comes up in the suggestions. So it's pretty obvious. We're pretty much on the wrong, but that's okay. Our channel is made for people with long attention spans and high IQs, and so we just keep it low-key, and it's mostly history, ancient languages, artifacts, thousands of artifacts, and then different subjects that go all over the place. Just things that I've collected for the deck for several decades that I show and I have fun with.
Yes, you do, and you got to keep it light, or you absolutely can go crazy. Let's, we hooked up through I hope he's listening. I invite him to come on, Terry. Terry's an amazing resource himself. I was talking to him about a totally separate subject, and he said, you know, there's a guy named Harry Hubbard who you probably need to get to know, and so He gave me your phone number. I remember it was just three weeks ago, maybe a month ago, I called and you didn't know who I was. Who's this? Well, all I had to say was Terry Carter referred me, and from there was just an interesting.
We spent 2 hours on the phone.
we surely did, because there's a lot of cross-referencing. Well, let's just we'll take this any way you want to go. It's a huge story, but I want to There is something happening next week on the 8th that's kind of unique, and there's a buzz of it on the internet. A lot of people are saying, well, it's just nothing. It's just a simple total eclipse of the sun. But when you see the path that this was, what's called the umbra, out this where we get the word umbrella, under the light, right? The umbra will make an entrance into the United States at a place called Eagles Pass in Texas, and will come pretty much on a south to north path. It will pass right through your neck of the woods, and that just is amazing to me, because 7 years ago, and that's what was called then the Great American Eclipse, we see the same umbra crossing pretty much from a west to east trajectory. But where this crosses and forms what's called in the Paleo-Hebrew, the Tau, it is right where you're broadcasting tonight. A place called, hold the phone, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, Little Egypt. Little Egypt. How many people have ever heard of Little Egypt in America? And not only America, pretty much the heartland of America. Well,
now there are people doing YouTube channels about America is Egypt, Egypt is America, just so many things, so many influences that they see here, and they're pointing them out. And a lot of, you know, stuff underneath the reservoirs, a lot of stuff that's been covered over, things that have been found, just amazing things. The ancients were all over the place. And even in the 1800s, there were so many books about the Phoenicians coming here, the Romans coming here, Egyptians coming here, you know, just on and on and on. And then it all kind of, when they started to sanitize the books in the early 1900s, especially after World War II, they wanted to make it look like, you know, Columbus was first. He came here, found a bunch of savages, and but he never landed on the soil of America. And Amerigo Vespucci, that we're named after, he was never here either. So we didn't have a chance.
Yeah. Well, I found some interesting things, and I was looking, I was searching actually in some archives out of with a Spanish gentleman, and you know, one of the earliest explorations and mapping of the area to the north of what is today known as Florida, you know, from where actually Columbus landed in 1492 in the East Indies, the area, but they were actually mapping, this is like the 1520s now. This is the era of Cortez and the conquistadores that went inland into the Central America and found the Aztecs and King Montezuma, et cetera, et cetera. But what is amazing is all the way up the eastern seaboard, there was detailed sketches of what is now now known as Long Island, New York. And on Montauk, the Montauk Point, lo and behold, there's a series of pyramids. The pyramids go back. In fact, the Montauk Native American tribe is what they've called. Their leaders were given the term Pharaoh. They were pharaohs of Montauk Point, and they had clearly the power of the pyramids going on. Now, why is this not in our history books, Harry?
Because it goes against the grain. And the Johannes Rusch map from 1490, I believe it was, or late 1480s, that Columbus used clearly had Cape Cod of Massachusetts on that map, but it was labeled as China. And Cuba is on that map also listed as Japango, and it does not look like Japan at all. It clearly is Cuba. So Columbus sets out and just to be looking for the missing 8 hours on the map that he had. I mean, he was using the maps, and they had already calculated, I'm sorry for the flat earthers, but the circumference of the earth was very accurately, mathematically equated out like around 0 BC with King Edward II, or like maybe 20 BC. He had calculated it within just a few miles. So then all these flat earth. Well, the earth didn't turn flat really until, you know, the internet. It's an internet sensation now. So,
well, yeah, we can talk about that on another show perhaps. But yeah, there's you can circumnavigate. I'll just say this: you can circumnavigate something without going around a globe. You can circumnavigate in a circle and a compass point. I'll just leave it there at that. But listen. We come in, we see this, the untold story of Columbus, even, right? You have the fact that, you know, in 1492, the so-called Jews of Portugal and Spain were being ousted. And it's clear by looking at the ship's registry, the Nina, Pinta, Santa Maria, they were all Jewish deckhands. In fact, if you look at the Hispaniola, the islands that became the home of Columbus and his crew, they were the tombstones that were for their burial areas were carved with such things as the candelabra, the Star of David. So, I mean, they're clearly early Jewish burials there. No,
I haven't seen any of that information. I have not seen any of it. I would question that real big. If there's pictures in books, or even books from Mexico in modern day, they taint a lot of the what they call Mayan, the ancient Mexican. After we did our video on searching for Quetzalcoatl, well, there was a guy that contacted us. Hey, man, what's in the book is different than what's on the pyramid, on the edifice. And so, you know, it's something I've never seen that. I don't think that the Star of David was adopted until after that.
Harry, you haven't seen it because it's been hidden, but I have seen it. Okay, I have seen it. In Jamaica, in the islands down there, the jungle had taken it over, and they were cutting back the jungle. And here's these graveyards, and they're outfitted with their Jewish symbols. They were clearly part of the manifest of the crew of Christopher Columbus. And there's a lot of, in fact, there's historical novels put out by a guy named Steve Barry. Now, he fictionalizes it, but it's based on historical fact, okay? The Columbus Affair, he talks about this in depth. There's a lot of evidence that Columbus was bringing artifacts to be put here in the New World because there were historical structures of, again, going back to the Egyptians. That's where I lead into this, that they came up the Great River into other places, and there was quite a civilization, which leads us to the topic of Little Egypt. Now, you know, when we first started talking, there is, oh gosh, what's the name of the ruins there in southern Illinois? Where there's 120 pyramids. Escaped my memory of just a minute. There's a big park there, Cahokia or something. What's the name of that park?
Cahokia, Monk's Mound. Cahokia. There were 123, 128
articulate mounds. Yes. Yeah, the Monk's Mound being the largest. Partially excavated when? In about 1920, 1930. Amazing things brought out, and not the least of which are large skeletons. When I read in the history there of it.
That's when they had to close it up.
That's right. They closed it up. So why? I mean, you've got something called Woodhenge, right? That was there. Tell us about that.
Well, there's clearly a wood hinge there at the base of Monk's Mound, and I would question some of the folklore concerning because Spain was running all of the Jewish people out of Spain, and pushing them out into the ocean, saying, get out of here. I just don't see that Columbus would be able to put them on his boat unless he caught them out in the ocean. Hey, you want to ride to America or something like that? It would be a real chance situation that I am absolutely unfamiliar with. And I have not read anything about that in Samuel Morrison's definitive book, but there's a lot of gaps in the story, in the Columbus story through the 1600s, 1700s, 1800s. There are a lot of gaps. I will have to say that.
Yeah, that's the thing. Who really was Christopher Colon, and what's his
Colombo,
history? And
you know,
if you look at his actual, I mean, it wasn't that he was going for funding from Isabel and he was pretty much wealthy according to the research done and put out in, again, Steve Barry's novel. Again, historical novel. There's fiction brought into it. But in fact, he gives us footnotes of the actual history, and it's pretty amazing. But we're not going to talk about the Jews per se tonight. Let's talk about the ancient Egyptians and what your websites and your videos you put out are quite jaw dropping. Could this be the final resting place of the tomb of Alexander the Great? Now, history tells us, no, he's entombed around Alexandria, Egypt, which was named after him. He founded it, right, in, what, 326 B.C. And yet, where's his tomb? Where did it go? And where did all the wealth that he accumulated, where did it go?
It all came over here. I think, oh, this is fantastic. This is just outrageous. How in the world that we have stood on the ground for 30 years. We were the first people that ever declared that we had located the tomb of Alexander the Great. And it was several months after that, then the woman from Siwa, the Greek woman from Siwa, and all she had was sand and an idea. She didn't have any stones to add on it. Mariam and Seta Ben Ra, Arxantris, Bas Alexupelio, you know, different stones with his name, Cleopatra, mother of Helios, beloved of the gods, Cleopatra, mother of Helios, the king. And so basically, if people don't realize that Cleopatra was the end of the Ptolemaic dynasty. Alexander was the first corpse in the Sema, in the family mausoleum. He was put there by his half-brother, Soter the First. So for 300 years, Alexander was in Alexandria. And at that time, Octavian was in a battle with Mark Antony. He had it in for Cleopatra and Mark Antony, but he had to take his troops around the Hellespont and down through Judea. And so during that time, Cleopatra got her act together and whisked her and a lot of the stuff out of there. Now, we know what happened, and people said, like, well, how'd it get here? How'd it get here? The stones clearly lay out, and there's dozens and dozens of artifacts deciphered on our YouTube channel. You can go there. There's a Numidian, Phoenician, Egyptian hieroglyph, lots of Latin, and a little bit of Greek. But Mark Antony and Cleopatra's son, Alexander Helios, is missing from history. We know that he went back to Rome. And he in chains with his sister, Cleopatra Selene, and they were paraded by Octavian. This is after Cleopatra and Mark Antony are undead. Unlived. I think that unlived, is that what the new word is? Or let's say pushing up daisies. Okay. So so after that, because Octavian was flaunting, hey, you know, look, we captured him. But Cleopatra Selene and King Juba II, who was a captive himself from Mauritania, which was North Africa, where Libya is today, pretty much, typically. And they were growing up in the palace of Octavian. Well, since Octavia, who is supposed to be one of the most beautiful women in the world, according to the history books, she had them all. She took in Alexander Helios, Cleopatra Selene, and Ptolemy Philadelphus, which is their little brother that Mark Antony and Cleopatra had. Their youngest was Ptolemy Philadelphus. She claimed them as her own children because she was Mark Antony's legal wife. And that's where our story begins. And evidently, what had happened is, we don't know what happened to the 10th Legion that Caesar and Mark Antony had. They did not want to serve under Octavian, and who later became Augustus Caesar. Let me get my names correct here. Octavian became Augustus Caesar in 14 BC. So when I'm saying Octavian, I'm really talking about Augustus Caesar. Right. So the army didn't want to serve under Octavian. So evidently, and nobody knew more about the ocean, the Atlantic, than King Juba II. He was he wrote several books on volumes on traveling in the Atlantic and the Mediterranean. And so it looks like between Octavia, King Juba II, Cleopatra Selene, and Alexander Helios, they all got together some way, somehow, put all the 10th Legion on the boats and get them out of here. That's what Octavian probably is going to get them out of here. I don't want to be fighting Julius Caesar's army all my life. Let's get them out of here. Okay, then safe passage through the Mediterranean, out the Straits of Gibraltar. They probably, according to these tablets, they probably supplied themselves up at the port of Cadiz and then sailed across the ocean and went up the Mississippi. And I've got several map stones that I just put in some of my videos recently. There's just more and more that has come up. Everything has come up that it was that we were right the first time. And since we declared that Alexander the Great, the entire Ptolemaic dynasty, including Queen of Queens Cleopatra the VII, was in Marion County, Illinois, there have been 19, count them, 19 since we declared it. Okay, now throughout history, for the past 2,000 years that this mausoleum has been missing, no one made any hoot over finding this dynasty. Nobody. But then we come along in 1994 and filed the papers that we discovered, you know, we found, and we didn't discover it, we just deciphered the stuff and put the history together through the books. And the tablets were talking about this Alexander Helios, and sure enough, man, it was Cleopatra and Mark Antony's missing son. He's missing at about the age of 10. And brought them all over here. Well, since then, there's been 19 pseudo-sites with nothing to support their claims, nothing. And now when you go to our YouTube channel, which is Alexander the Great, I just changed the name of it, you see all the gold, just the pieces. And these are replicated pieces because the guy that looted this tomb first, he stole all the gold. Him and his buddies stole the gold, slapped it into a Swiss bank, the money into a Swiss bank account, and then lost the account numbers. Okay, so I'm not making any of this up. And so that's still sitting there. But when you go and you look at all of these trinkets and all of the pieces that are replicated gold pieces, it's just endless. I mean, pile after pile after pile, probably to the tune of at least 2.5 tons, maybe 3 tons. But there again, it doesn't take much gold to make a ton. If anybody remembers the old brown paper sacks that we used to get for our groceries, over half of a brown paper sack is a ton of gold. It's heavy. And they brought it all over here, put it up in there, and it was enlisted in treasure books since the early 60s. Nobody had made any headway on it. Nobody checked it out until 1982. I mean, there were people that had reported on it and actually took these treasure guide writers to the site. And Michael Paul Henson, he thought that the site was so important that he wanted it to be in other people's treasure books. So what he did was he teamed up with Terry Brown, his friend that wrote the U.S. Treasure Atlas, and put the same site, the same location, but coming in from the west. So Michael Paul Henson had it coming in from the east on the road, and then Terry Brown had it coming in from the west. And he crisscrossed these two treasure books, and he went right there. He didn't discover anything. He bought it in the early 80s. There was a big rush on metal detectors. There weren't very many back in the 70s. The only metal detector you could get is from like Heathkit, that you bought the kit and put it together, and they were very shoddy. They weren't that good. But in order to get people to buy more metal detectors, they were giving away free treasure guides.
Ha! There you go.
That's how he got there.
Have you seen the there's a National Geographic channel TV series called I believe it's Mystery Files. I saw this in 2010, 2011. So in preparation for tonight's interview with you, I went back and I'd seen that particular show, and I went back and pulled some transcripts on it. Let me just kind of give you the premise of it. The host of the show, Andrew Chug, now he was following the trail of Alexander the Great's tomb, because obviously the one that's supposed to be there in Alexandria, Egypt, is like empty. Where is the sarcophagus, or the one that's there is empty? There's no proof of anybody being there. So what happened to it? So here's National Geographic coming out and showing there was some merchants. They were called Rodanites. Now, by the way, that's who today's modern so-called Jews are. They're the merchant class, the Rodanites, the Venetian. Okay, there was a search for Saint Mark, the biblical Saint Mark, the evangelist, and searching for that in Venice, they uncovered a key part of a 3rd century BC fragment that was in ancient Macedonian Greek tomb, and it gave a secret clue that Alexander's body was taken and went out of Alexandria, Egypt, to another point west. Now, it didn't specify that. So that was suddenly they were looking for Saint Mark the Evangelist. They found, wait a minute, this is a huge clue that the tomb of, and all the riches really, which had been missing, were put in a fleet of ships and sent west. Now, how far west is a question? Okay. Have you heard of that that mystery file?
No, and having been on the History Channel and watched it, I wouldn't trust anything you see on History Channel, Geographic, Smithsonian, Discovery. It's all propaganda. They want to fit the narrative into a little cubicle, and that's what they do. I mean, they were here. They did a hatchet job on me. I was on the History Channel, worked with them a year and a half, and they gave me 15 minutes of a hatchet job. So you know, if this thing's ever opened up, sorry, Discovery, History, AMC, you're out of it.
I would definitely agree with your assessment there, but I just bring it up because of the fragment. There were people writing about that you're right, Alec. This was the National Geographic Channel kind of pointed. It's like misdirection. I saw that immediately because we said, well, it's actually there in Macedonia. He went home to his Greek origins, you know. He's in Macedonia. Well, no, the fragment clearly said the ships went west. I'm sorry, how do you get west going to Greece from Alexandria?
Well, I would. So did they show the fragment?
They did. They showed. They didn't focus on it, but enough. There had been scholars writing about it that they didn't even bother to talk to them. That's what I'm saying. They just skewed the information for some reason.
Okay, and now, when was the fragment supposedly written, and what language was it written in? And what was the medium of scribing it? Was it papyri? Was it, I mean, you know, I have so many questions with stuff like that. I've been doing this for over 30 years now, and I have learned to question so much except what I know to be hardcore facts. Like people, hey, here's a fragment. Well, we've proven that the Dead Sea Scrolls back in, 1995, 96, that they were all fake, and we were the first to come out and say that. Now there's all kinds of people coming out following us that say, hey, man, they were right. You know, people in ancient times, they didn't double space. They didn't write with ink. They didn't have these perfect, and there's no smudges on the Dead Sea Scrolls. Well, man, I can't even write with a pencil without having to use the eraser 40 times.
Oh, but come on, it's got to be correct as the Jews say it is. Oops. I mean,
so that would be my deal is I, you know, I hear stories, I see stuff on the net, and it throws up red flags. There was one here I saw the other day, and it was these guys putting out some stuff that right then, as soon as I saw it, I knew it was fake. And people are like, oh, wow, that's so impressive. Wow, these guys are so good. And it's just total fake. And you got to understand, for me, what the syntax is, what the lettering is, what the language was. Does it have the right syntax? In other words, the right word order. And what you'll see with all these, the Las Lunas inscription in New Mexico, the Newark Holy Stones, it's in Hebrew, or what you call Paleo-Hebrew, or I call it Punic, characters, okay, or shaft characters, but it has an English syntax. even Hebrew, what people call Hebrew today, has a Latin syntax. There's nothing about the Hebrew language that is Semitic. Nothing. Nothing. It is all fake. And the Hebrew language of today was invented in the late 1800s. Oh, how do you, well, because that's what, it's all on the net now, the guys that did it.
What do you
the
mean?
Guys that invented it, and they show you how they invented it. And it's right there. And that was something that Paul and I always had a problem with, is the Hebrew word order and syntax. Didn't make any sense. Especially when it came to the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Well, yeah, the bottom line is nobody knows where the actual sarcophagi and tomb corpse of Alexander the Great is. That's the whole point. You're saying it's right in your neck of the woods, right there in the heartland of America, Little Egypt.
Yep. And people go, well, why is it called Little Egypt? Well, I'm a simpleton when it comes to that. I would say that that possibly some Mennonite or some Amish kids were out playing, or even some Christians, whatever, in the 1800s, and they found some tablets around here that had Egyptian hieroglyph on them. I mean, I've had people find tablets along the Skillet Fork River here today that had Egyptian hieroglyph on them. They have found Roman coins and Greek coins. They found Alexander coins down in Tennessee. They found ancient coins all over Illinois, Kentucky, Indiana, Ohio. And all of these massive, massive earthworks just everywhere, like Monk's Mound. And the only way we can even compare Monk's Mound today with anything of modern technology is a landfill. That's the only way you're going to get a mound 100 feet high is with bulldozers and lots of diesel. And all the mounds in Ohio and all the intricate enclosures and all the just ancient civilization is just all over this country. Before the late 1800s, the largest building in the world was over there in the American Southwest. The largest building, I think it's either Pueblo Benito or Aztec ruin. These are massive, massive ruins. Incredible. Well, where do people go? Who made them? Who built them? It's obviously engineered. Even these ancient sites, these Hopewell and Edina sites in Ohio and all over, they're all engineered. They're just not, hey, man, let's just build a cabin here.
What's your take on all these giants that came out of the Hopewell mounds there? Was that the real deal? The giants of Nephilim?
Well, it all depends on what you call a giant. For me, a giant is a male or man that is 15 to 16 feet tall, and a female that is 12 to 13 feet tall. 10 feet tall, 8 feet tall, 11, 12 feet is not a giant for me. But they're everywhere. They found them. They found a mound in Nebraska where they were all very short people with six fingers and six toes. The giants they found had double rowed teeth. And the Smithsonian does their best to just sweep all this under the rug. Why? Because it goes against the anti-Christian creation of the Bible. They want to make it look, it promotes evolution. They want, if it doesn't promote evolution, then they want it out of here. A guy that's got three or four extra ribs in his rib cage and got double rows of teeth and he's 14 feet tall, that's not evolution. We can't fit that in there. But
yeah, good point.
My whole deal though is if a guy has two rows of teeth, and I've seen some pictures of them. I've never seen one that was maybe a long time ago. Some of these giants that had double rows of teeth. Can you imagine cavities and tooth pain? I mean, I struggled with that when I was growing up. You know, all the time got a cavity. If you had instead of 32 teeth, 64 teeth.
Well, if they had they had good diets and highly nutritious minerals, there is no such thing as tuk-tuk.
That, I hope that is, but you know, there's still berries and there's still a lot of carbohydrate and sugar out there. I mean, even even on a caveman diet.
Well, this is what I've got a couple of books on the giants that were excavated and hid, and we're talking the 1880s, 1890s, early 1900s, and there's photographs of these that clearly are not staged. And you're right, your definition of a giant is well over 15 feet tall, in some cases even taller, massive bone structure, and six digits, fingers and six toes and double rows of teeth, and the evidence is that they loved eating humans. They were cannibalistic. I shouldn't say, because they weren't eating themselves. They were eating humans.
Humans taste like chicken, and the only part that has any actual real meat to it is the buttocks. I guarantee you, if you had canned Campbell's human flavored soup, people would buy it just to see what it tasted like.
Well, I think the people
that's as far insane as we've become. They were everywhere, and they've done their best to shut it up. They want, Darwin's theory of evolution is it. That's it. Anything that goes against that, any pygmies, any small people, little people, it doesn't fit. Does not fit. I was hiking with a friend. And Paul got to see it too, on the south banks of the Gila River. This is years ago. And there's a whole village. There's a little village built into the side of the cliff wall of the Gila River. And the doors are all 24 inches tall. And it's a granary. There's a sidewalk. There's houses there. There's apartments. Like a little high rise, 24 inches tall. Well, you can't hardly even bend down and look in them for a good-sized human, like, 6-foot-tall human. You barely get a flashlight in there. That's another one. The little people, they were everywhere, too. So we had giants, small people, regular people. Gosh, who knows? Who knows?
Yeah, you're right. I've never heard much about the little guys, but other than the leprechauns of Hesperia and the islands of Ireland, of course,
and the fairies of Sir Conan Doyle, which is another issue. I mean, now it's been proven that there are rods. Maybe there were some children that could see rods, and there are so many mysteries on this planet. We just have fun. Look, there's so many mysteries that we will never, ever, ever know what happened to these people. Okay, in this country, for instance, the sidetrack, we have 155,000 miles of railroad track spanning this country, all over from state to state to state to state. Everybody's got railroads in their town, right? Okay. That pales in comparison to over 250,000 miles of stone walls in New England, down into Tennessee, North Carolina, Georgia, the whole eastern. They have these stone walls, and a good one, a good channel for that is Stonewall Research. Stonewall Research on YouTube, and he does a great, great job. My buddy Dave on giants too. That's why I don't touch with the giants, is because there's been so many people. I was over giants in the 1980s. My dad had all the books from the 80s. I said, there's these big guys, and they've been swept underneath the truck. And now you have the Dewhurst guy, and you have Dave Budcat, Stonewall Research. He did a state-to-state-to-state of giants, of what they found in the giants, going back to the 1800s and 1700s. And they were everywhere. They were even along the Ohio River here. I spoke to a guy, actually met him, and he said that when he was a kid, his father had a huge skull that his grandfather had found on the banks of the Ohio. And they also found a Roman boat in the Ohio River when it was low, low water level. They found so much stuff in the Ohio River. Falls of the Ohio, they found ancient Roman coins. Not just there, but all over Tennessee. There were some people that found an ancient Roman coin on some property where they were building a house with a basement in Alabama. I remember this from like a couple of decades ago. And the Smithsonian, they reported it like good people should. Well, then the state archaeologist of Smithsonian came in, took their land and ran them off of it and said, see ya. You know, so if you find something, if you have a giant or you found an ancient coin or if you have a real strange artifact such as with an elephant on it or a monkey or a lion, do not call the Smithsonian. Call Harry Hubbard. I'm easy to find on the internet. Harry Hubbard's, my email address is plastered everywhere. Send pictures to Harry Hubbard. And don't involve any of your state archaeologists or Smithsonian, because all they'll do is take it. They may even charge you money for taking it. Who knows? The way that the government is now, I don't trust any of them. And nobody should. Nobody.
Well, we definitely agree there. I'm from the government. I'm here to help you.
Exactly. I'm here to help you. We just want to help you.
We need you to need some help. So
yeah.
Where are you going to spend your time this April 8th? What's your thoughts on this Umbra crossing there in Little Egypt? What's your thoughts?
The X pattern that you are referring to for your audience, I'll explain, is it's right over our tomb. It's right over. And God decides where the solar eclipses are going to happen. Okay, that's all I'll say. But this is my fourth total eclipse. The first one was when I was a kid in Georgia. Then I was in Charlotte, North Carolina. And then I was here in 17, which came dark. It got dark here. My security light had come up. And this year I will be here at home with my, I'm laying out. My prep is completely different than other people's prep. Other people want to look up at the eclipse. I'm going to have lots of cardboard and wood on the ground so that I can show and film the ground. Everybody wants to look up. I've seen solar eclipses before. Okay, fine, all well and good. I want to show more on the ground and the elliptical shadows and the way the leaves come through and certain things like that. To me, the ground is more interesting when you've seen three total eclipses. I'm more interested in the ground. And unfortunately, I didn't have my act together last time, but, that it was here in 17. But this year I will. I will have, I've got wood, I've got cardboard, and unless it's real windy, well, I'll have to weight it down with bricks, but I'll be filming the ground, which to me is just fascinating. So, but I'm a little weird. You probably figured that out, so.
Well, Scott, you got how many minutes? Four minutes of total darkness?
I think we're going to have here over 3 minutes. I think in the total pinpoint, it's like 4 minutes. Last time I was over 3 minutes. This time I know I'm going to. I'm only like just a couple of miles from the core of it, and same as last time. So I'm, I'll be here with my cat filming the ground.
So Gally, yeah. I've got some a list of questions that we can start on the second hour. We take a break for about 3 or 4 or 5 minutes or so. You can get some gargling or some fresh water in you. But as we pursue this topic of, I call it forbidden archaeology. Okay, because I'm an innocent, as a young man, 16 years old, I stumbled across one of these giant skeletons in southern Utah, a place called Johnson's Canyon, and a wash there. And I thought it was a dinosaur at first. It was just this big, a fresh flash flood had carved out a wash and in the red soil, and it was about an 8-foot, 9-foot cutout. And my task was to go look for lost cows, you know, in those washes. Uh-huh. They couldn't get out. You know, maybe they're just tracking them. But I came around this curve, and there was this, looked like a great big, you know, rock of some sort. But I noticed that it was like, had the, you know, how skulls have the partitions, and I could see clearly the lines. And I said, what is that? And came out, and lo and behold, it was a huge human skull, top of the skull. And it was clearly, I thought it was some kind of a dinosaur skull. My uncle about it. Next thing I know, that of course this is Bureau of Land Management, BLM land. So they contacted the BLM, as good citizens are supposed to, and they contacted, I believe, Brigham Young University. This was back in the early 70s. Next thing I know, we're watching as they come with the team, and yeah, the Smithsonian special excavators came in, and boy, did they make short work of that thing. I thought it would be on TV, you know, so I thought it was newsworthy.
Yeah.
You know? Wow, look at this thing. As it laid out, they found it was, I don't know how many feet tall, but the skull was massive, I'll tell you that.
There was nothing ever said or printed or anything about it, was there?
Never. And it was like that we were told not to talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good one. And you want me to trust what those guys say? I'm not buying it. Now, when Hernando Cortez went into Mexico in the early 1500s, when he got to Tenochtitlan, where Moctezuma was, and as they were talking about this and about that, and they were Moctezuma and his men were talking about how there were giants in the land years and years ago. And then Cortez asked, "Well, giants? Well, how big? How, you know, what kind of giants?" And so Montezuma, I call him Moctezuma, said, "Well, go get the thing." One of his guys brought in, I guess, two or three of this guy's brought in a human thigh bone that was as tall as Cortez. Right? So call it 5.5 feet.
Yeah.
A human thigh bone that was 5.5 feet. So you can calculate that. I calculated 22.5 feet long. I mean, tall.
Okay, that was about, it's called the femur bone, the large bone. I was able to see, and just enough to see, that the thigh bones that were being put together was at least 5.5-6 feet tall. Yes. That's just a thigh bone. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, it is, that and the lower femur, I guess, are the two. I guess the thigh bone is the second longest bone in the human body, 5.5 feet. So take it from there. So there are a lot of anomalies, especially here, and there's no telling what they found in Mexico, down in Central America, that they hushed up. I mean, I've got so many pictures of artifacts and folklore of like they found in Peru, for instance, years ago. They found some purple jade, and they weren't aware of what they found in some kind of burial, whatever. They sent it in.
These emperor that man, I've been researching that with the team that owns it, and it is stunning. There's not enough money.
Okay,
are you
talking about that green piece?
Yeah, that's nephrite.
Okay, okay. I didn't want to mention too much about that, but I got some good questions on for you on that now. Me and Paul were just gaga over that last night. I mean, you sent the picture like a week or so ago.
Uh-huh.
And I just found it on my phone, and I sent it to Paul, and we're like, holy smokes. Like, incredible.
Yeah. So, well, you know,
so
that's...
We'll talk about that a little bit later, because, you know,
There is so much that the people listening to, you know, to the nightly news and Anderson Cooper just have absolutely no clue about. Things that just make you stand up and say, how in the world does it happen? But yeah, we know these things. We're not making it up, ladies and gentlemen. It's real. Golly, you know, we got to take a break here pretty quick. We just got a few minutes before the break. Let's take a where can people get what's the best way to get on your Voluminous website? Google your name.
Well, our actual website got hacked in spring of 21, and some people told me about it, and it was just in shatters. So we couldn't put it back up. It was split to pieces, and I think it was obvious it was on purpose. And now we don't know if it was something malicious or somebody just messing with us. So we never messed with it again. But there's plenty on the Illinois Caves YouTube channel. You can YouTube channel you can search Harry Hubbard, and I just changed the name of it to Tomb of Alexander of Great. And so, you know, there's plenty of videos there. 130 of them.
There is. You've done a lot of work over the last 3 decades. We're going to take a break, ladies and gentlemen. This is The Story Behind the Story. I'm your host, Dr. H. Rod. My special guest, the one, the only, Harry Hubbard. We brought you to these
Stone Rulers.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.